Right. Looks like all the groups are back. Should we start off, Michelle, as you are sitting there, should we start off with the debt disclosure? It might be an idea to start off with that and then we move to the wider topic that Holger introduced, which I'm sure will lead to other comments about disclosure. But Michelle, we'll group first.
Okay, so the key summary from the group who stayed here was, I think there was general support that the staff proposal would provide the raw information for analysts to review the information about the gross debt movement and understand the gross cash flows around financing activities and perhaps use that information in some of the estimates they make around estimating what free cash flows are. I think there was an important point that where a company actually manages its financing on a net basis, that this proposal wouldn't stop people giving a net debt reconciliation if that was more useful. And I think we would need to make clear that although we're requesting the gross reconciliation, it wouldn't stop anyone going further than doing a net reconciliation where they showed the components of cash and cash equivalents and things. There was some feedback, I think, that we can take into the wider project about how cash flow statements might be improved by improving disclosures around actual tax paid, interest paid, and actually understanding which components are in operating activities and which are in financing activities. And within that, it was very clear that because we were using the definition of reconcile the activities within the financing area, that people needed to know what liabilities were included in financing, so that first step was very important, and perhaps understanding more of what those components are is important. I think that was the general view, but there were one or two people who would have preferred either to have allowed management to define debt themselves or to have waited for a longer term project on actually having a definition of debt. I hope that's a fair representation.
Okay, that's good. Let's move straight on to Christy.
So again, in our group, so in our group, I think from a user's perspective, there was general support. They felt we were moving in the right direction and would be useful, in particular, if there was a big change in debt or if there was a company that was had a high indebtedness. And it, to some extent, it did provide the information they wanted around debt. I think the question then moved on to the information that they would like in addition to that, which would be around working capital, so information about changes in inventory and receivables. And that's where they saw the bigger, longer-term work moving to. Preparers felt that they could do this. This is what they do internally. Actually, not directly what they do internally, because they reconcile to net debt internally, which is different from the cash flow statement. So again, their view is they'd be happy to provide this information. It made sense. There was some concern about moving something that they used internally to something that was audited. And there was also some concern that that information might be already in the financial statements, though others felt that it was, even if it was there, it was good to present it together because that's useful for users as well. I think the other thing, point that was raised was about the cash flow statement, cash flow reported more generally, and a concern with the way IFRS requires it. And I think, again, a sense that that's maybe where the ISP could spend some time in the future. Hopefully, that if there's any other points people want to raise.
Okay, so it didn't sound like there was too much objection to a debt disclosure. Anybody want to add anything?
Actually, I'd like to focus on what's not in there at the moment. And that is when you talk about giving more attention on debt, I think the ISB should, at the same instance, take up the most basic relevant disclosures on debt, which is governance, what are the levels of the governance, what is the performance on the governance according to the defined ratios in the loans, for example, what part of the assets are encumbered. And this is something really, really important. It actually takes, if you as a company report what are the encumbered assets, that can take away so much uncertainty about your ability, even in bad times, to refinance because you still have unencumbered assets. It's something that investors worry about, whether companies can refinance themselves. And this is information that is very uncommon, but very, very, actually very normal for, should be very normal to disclose.
I think this is brilliant, so I'm definitely in favor of the idea. I have only one question, and that is, how do these right-of-use assets and right-of-use liabilities show up? Because as I understand it, they are netted in the cash flow statement. So if you connect the reconciliation of debt to the cash flow statement...
So you mean at the inception of a lease?
Yeah, at the inception.
So there's no cash flow, so it doesn't appear?
No. But it will appear as a debt.
Yeah, and it will appear, therefore, in a reconciliation. That's the whole point of the reconciliation.
And I'm satisfied.
Sandra?
Question the need for it, because it seems as if the information is already there in the statement of cash flows and disclosures of non-cash transactions, and you know your opening and closing balance. The only piece that you really don't have is the Forex impacts. And theoretically, if you had a material obligation that was in a different currency, you'd be disclosing that as well.
So I echo by Martin. Martin just gave a very short list of what's missing, and we could go on for a lot, but there's a lot of debt information missing. And in fact, I think there's, I'll give an example, there's a lot of structures now that are supply chain financing, there's debt around those, and those are running completely off the radar. And so that to Sandra's comment, reconciliations are, they're really useful from a user point of view because it lays out where the pieces are and it gives you a map. And when you already know that you're missing a lot of things, it's really helpful at least to find some of the pieces, the cash, the non-cash.
Echo that comment, and I think standardization, for example, we're talking about the cash flow statement, cash interest and cash taxes, would be a significant improvement. Also, part of this is that there are third-party vendors like Bloomberg, for example, that have to interpret some of this information that came into spreadsheets that are generated automatically from the ticker, for example, which is something we might do with large cap names, investment grade names, kind of thing on the debt side. I think breaking down the components is incredibly beneficial and useful. The other comment was on the disclosure of debt covenants. I think all that would be great. My observation is that a lot of times the obligations are private obligations, and covenants within them are also there for private obligations. Companies are reticent to disclose, they really cannot disclose covenant information. Love it, but in the notes section, not obviously in any of the statements themselves.
Okay, other comments?
From a user perspective, echo everything that's been said. I'd also just highlight, of course, illustrate, because we have a direct cash flow method, we already get quite a lot more information about cash taxes, cash debt, etc., or cash payments for around debt. And I just think, even for us, that reconciliation really does provide you with that roadmap. And I'm absolutely in agreement that if the data is already there and it's already being prepared, is it such a big ask then just to put it essentially in one reconciliation table within the notes of the case?
Okay, well, with agreement for that part of the disclosure of project, let's have a go at the second bit, shall we? Holger, you're there, should we start?
Yeah, I think
question raised the context of cross-referencing. I think there was not so broad support to extend this kind of cross-referencing mechanism, because there are several concerns from preparers as well as from the user side. I think preparers argue that there are still unclear audit concerns, you know, what really forms part of the audited financial statements. And they also express that, you know, there are different jurisdictions have different kind of requirements, what kind of information is required and would be audited. So there's kind of still a lot of questions around how actually auditors would go with this kind of cross-referencing information. I think there was also some kind of views that instead of referencing outside of the financial statements, our report should actually reference to the financial statements instead. So it's more that the financial statement should be the core where everybody could refer to, but not really outside. And I think that the user's concern is really that if you're really thinking or start to think of that information, you have to look for the information in different places. That's really something where users getting uncomfortable. And we discussed that, but you know, you could actually overcome this kind of concerns to have kind of requirements that the information must be in the same report, so that we would actually audit the same location. That could be something where users don't have this kind of concerns that the information would be spread all over different reports and places. For the other issue on organization of information, I think there were some concerns when the board would actually start to think about how to rewrite disclosures, and some argue that you could actually lose the kind of context why the disclosures are there. For example, if you have every disclosure in one or just few standards, then you would actually may miss the kind of context and why the information, why the disclosure is there. Also, there were concerns that actually this kind of effort would take quite long, and it's not really a kind of, let's say, priority in your view. On the other side, in context of the importance of information and how to, or whether you should order the information by importance, or whether you should have a kind of, let's say, brief summary on top of the notes, what kind of information should really draw the special attention. I think that was a very clear message that ordering information by importance is really something that should not be the case. So there should be no kind of requirements to order information by importance. However, there was quite support for the kind of idea to have a kind of summary of information that needs special attention for the, let's say, because something happened during the reporting period that was very special and important. So that was very clearly support from the user side to have such a kind of summary. I'm not quite sure, I hope this is kind of a good summary from our discussion, our group.
Okay, seems like it. Thank you. Eduardo?
So, morning everyone. I think the feedback was actually a little bit similar. For the cross-referencing, we had like strong support for cross-referencing and some kind of concerns regarding the same issues that Holger pointed, like auditing issues and the boundaries of audit financial statements and information. The key issue for cross-referencing is that it has to be as accessible as the financial statement is. So the cross-referencing information could be like spreading websites or other places. This was the main message. And one key point, a question that we had was very interesting is, are we going to mandate cross-referencing or not? So it's going to be optional. Will there be an option or not? That was a good point. And basically, it's all about readability, what the message that we got. So cross-referencing, it has to be very well derived from the financial statements in a manner where we have to have the information easy to be accessed. Basically, that was the message on the origin of the cross-referencing. For the organization of information, the support was also similar. We thought that, for example, that to use a single standard for disclosure was not going to be very appropriate, and the grouping of information should be left to the use, to the preparers to do. So the preparers should point and place the information useful as they think it should be based on the current standards that exist there. And also regarding the second question, for the summary of information, we also got the message clear that it's not a good thing, because it could create boilerplate, and it's not something that should be done. So basically that's the summary of how it was.
So you mean don't order by importance?
Yeah.
But then Holger said, but maybe a summary might be okay, but your group didn't agree with that.
No, didn't agree with the summary. They thought it could create boilerplate in time, the use of the summary.
Before I open it up, Christy, I wonder if you could just come back, because Jane raised the point earlier about financial statement presentation and how that ties in with the disclosure initiative, and I just wondered if you wanted to give a little bit more about the relationship between those.
So, see, we want to learn from some of the principles that were developed in the financial statement presentation project. We're looking to build on the high-level principles that were in that project rather than some of the detailed requirements. So we want to look at the principles of disaggregation, and we see that as disaggregation, aggregation, and then also about grouping by activity, so an idea of cohesiveness, because those are sort of high-level principles that could apply not only to presentation but to disclosures as well. So they, we see them as principles of disclosure across the press, and hence why we would look at them in this project. We're also doing some work on cash flows, and again, so we've asked the UK FRC to lead some work, and that's looking back at what do we need cash flow information for, and how it should be best presented. So that aspect of the FSP is in the disclosure initiative. I think what's not envisaged to be in the disclosure initiative is a detailed discussion about performance reporting, and I think to the extent that there is a project on performance reporting, that is ultimately a decision for the board, but I wouldn't see that being in the disclosure initiative itself.
And what are the next steps on the disclosure project overall? Because we've talked about two quite specific aspects here.
So we have a number of next steps in the SEPT. We have a paper on cross-referencing, what we're discussing today, and formatting of information to the board next month. And then in September, I think we're going to bring some really sort of fundamental steps. We're bringing back the responses we receive on the IS1, the short clarifying amendments to IS1 in September. We've been doing quite a lot of work researching materiality and how that's applied across jurisdictions. So we want to present the results of that research to the board, and at that point we want to ask the board whether we think additional guidance is necessary, and if so, what the form of that guidance would be. We're also, I think, going to be bringing some more sort of fundamental papers about the principles of disclosure project in September as well. We're looking to ultimately, in terms of the output, we want to have a standard on the IS1 amendments by the end of the year. With the positive feedback we've received on the changes in debt discussion today, we're taking that to the board in July and hope to have an ED by the end of the year. With the discussion paper, we're trying to see if we can get our discussions this year so we can have a DP earlier rather than later in 2015. And materiality, as I said, I think it hangs in the balance where the board wants to go with that. But I would expect that if nothing more, we would be disclosing publishing the research that we've done on materiality. Does that sort of give an overview?
That's good. So comments on cross-referencing, ordering, and if you want to go wider and talk about longer term, then that's fine as well. Hello.
I have a question about the fact that companies shouldn't disclose anything about the standards when they are not specific to the entity, the disclosure is not specific to the entity. Because I thought that it is useful for user, but I am not speaking about very well known aware about IFRS, but others that may, for example, look at an American group which has a financial statement according to US GAAP and a European group according to IFRS. I think it should be useful for a user to find the general principles explained, not a copy, of course, of all the standards, but only the highlights.
In the financial statements?
Yeah.
Or on a website?
No, I think on the financial statements.
So, I mean, I think first of all, I'd like to say I welcome the fact that the ISB is perhaps moving into the digital age and realizing that there are other possibilities than having a printed document. So, even thinking about cross-referencing, I think, is positive. Having said that, I'm still a bit old-fashioned, and I feel that the financial statements they are audited, so it does give them a certain that puts certain constraints. So I think there should be one set of financial statements numbered from page 1 to 50 or whatever it is that is clearly audited, but I think there is scope for some of the more complex and detailed disclosures that especially our user group here to be clearly labelled as audited, but then in order to avoid clutter is perhaps on a web page or something and not actually in the printed document. So I think that leads to the conclusion that you could think about disclosures being perhaps tiered into primary disclosures and secondary disclosures. You could think about some of the secondary disclosures touching on things like sensitivity analysis relating to impairment tests. You could think about it covering a lot of the details related to share-based compensation, pensions. You could think about it covering some of the smaller accounting policies that we as the parent feel are not that important, but perhaps need to still disclose. So I think it goes back to what we heard before. I think the financial statements which we want to attach to our annual report should be relevant, and so we should strive for something that's relevant. There's a whole trend to to think about producing an annual report that is a sort of integrated report that's more accessible to people, and clearly having in financial statements pages and pages on financial instruments disclosures for a non-financial organisation just introduce a whole load of complexity. So I like the direction you're going, but I can still feel there should be something that is complete and has the relevant disclosures in it, but perhaps not the detailed disclosures.
So who decides on the primary versus secondary? That's the preparer, isn't it?
Well, you're actually proposing, I haven't really thought it through, having, I must say, perhaps back in time I was against having all of the disclosures in one place, but thinking about it, it might help you as standard setters also put those disclosures in some sort of context if you actually had a disclosure standard so that you could yourself say these are the primary disclosures that we would to have and then leave it and then say these are optional disclosures either attached to the full set of financial statements or you could have the flexibility of paying on the web page.
Even though I might understand your argument about primary and secondary disclosures, I'm a little bit afraid about that because in reality if the information isn't provided at the same time, which is important, I think it will never be used. It's like publishing an annual report 2 months after announcing your results for fiscal year. Information will be really used.
I didn't say it wouldn't be there at the same time. That would be one of the constraints. You could say it would be audited as part of it, and it would be available, but it would not be in the annual report document. Many of us as preparers are tackling the physical limitations of getting these documents sent to our shareholders on time. we'd actually have to use a different site, a different weight of paper to get it into the postal system. Yeah. Otherwise, we're sending out reports by parcel post, you know.
I do get the point, but I'm a bit afraid of having this kind of leveling of information. And if it's not provided at the same moment, it will be not used in an efficient manner.
I'm not against doing that.
On the ordering, I don't know what's wrong with it, with the way it is at the moment. I would you've got the primary financial statements, the footnotes follow the ordering of the line items in the primary statements, and that's what one would expect. And of course, you'd also expect cross-referencing. That's not helpful. So for that reason, I wouldn't want the ordering reordered according to what preparers think I ought to be most interested in or not. So, footnotes. On the boilerplate stuff, which this is very interesting, I think the county policies have got very long at the beginning of the statements, there's now a lot of acceptance that that can be moved to the website. And it's interesting what Olivia's saying, but most of the users that I've spoken to think that there is no need to summarise an accounting standard in the accounting policy.
Because you think that users are only very well known when aware about IFRS.
Well, I think there's a couple of other things that can be done. One is, you could pick out ones that really are significant. So you're a software company, your approach to revenue recognition is very significant. There's one or two other experiments going on with UK companies whereby they put the, say in revenue, they'll have in a panel their accounting policy on revenue recognition, and then they'll have an entity-specific disclosure, which is more useful, on how they're applying it. And then you can sort of see the two together under the note that's referring to sales, which is quite an interesting approach. On the summaries of what's significant, there's so much, there is also progress now with the auditors' reports, with the IAASB's, key audit matters. Audit committees are coming out with more. So I think in terms of, what are the key areas you should look at, I'm not sure that the county policies is the place for that. I think the audit committee, auditors' reports, risk reports is developing all of that on a different front.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, Malcolm, I read between the lines some really interesting development. What you're saying is more concise, more relevant financial report. But actually, that's something compatible with users' wishes. But it would be at a more higher level, like the integrated report. And what users do not want is to replace the current annual report with an integrated report. That's not what users want. So users really expect some completeness in the financial report, and the physical barriers you mentioned, those are actually hardly anymore there, because I know so few users that still read the physical report. It's by nature. Users tend to read the PDF. When we visit companies, they said we used to print thousands of these reports, and now we only print them on demand.
If I may on that point, Martin, it depends upon the legal jurisdictional requirements. But there are still many countries around the world where you actually have to present to the shareholders' meeting the full set of consolidated financial statements. It depends on the that's the case in my particular cases. But on the other hand, that means you're sending to retail investors, to be honest, the people that, and be careful what I say here, but when we analyze actually who reads the physical annual report, it tends to be our older population, tends to be our people that are not so comfortable with the digital requirements, but they are actually the people that turn up at our shareholders meeting and they might turn up because they want to meet their colleagues or they want to have a coffee or whatever. but they are the people that actually cause us the problem in getting our very weighty tome out. And you have to typically, you know, you have to say, you know, it has to be sent out and received a couple of weeks, 20 days or something before the AGM. So anything that one can do to give to those retail shareholders who, you know, an ability to get an overview of what the financials are conveying, they don't need all the detail about the sensitivity analysis of goodness one. You might do, but they don't.
I think it's a very small group you're referring to.
No, but you shouldn't underestimate it. It depends on the legal jurisdiction. It's a legal requirement in many cases that you have to, in order to have a valid shareholders meeting, you have to have the same time.
Okay.
Can I just say, it's possible to talk about putting standard stuff on the website without patronising retail investors. So I would think, you know, I'm a retail investor, the things I would put on the website would certainly not be sensitivity analysis. It would be the reams of stuff about share-based payments. It would be reams of stuff about accounting policies, other than significant changes or interpretation. So I think there's I think there's a danger in associating the decluttering debate with the dumbing down narrative reporting debate. In favour of the decluttering, and I'm not in favour of dumbing down.
And Jane, who should decide what goes where? So what goes on the website and what doesn't?
One rule are the same words being repeated every year? So if it's a summary of an accounting policy that hasn't changed, why can't that go?
But the share-based payment numbers change each year.
But some of the corporate governance. I mean, the things that a lot of people will skip will be some of the detail about in the share-based payments. I'm not saying nothing. And some of the details in the government's statement. You're right, the difficulty is that maybe everybody would come up with a different version of what they think can just go on the web. But just please don't say it's a sort of, don't confuse detail decluttering with dumbing down.
I have a comment on the ordering of disclosure. I welcome the flexibility of ordering, but I still prefer the normative order under existing IFRS 1 because, first of all, we are accustomed to that order and it is easy to get to the point, and we have a benefit of comparability. And in addition, the importance of footnote will change year by year. So I think you should not require to disclose from the order of importance. Also, I welcome flexibility. And regarding the highlight information footnote, I don't agree to require this information footnote because it will provide an additional burden for preparers. This information should be disclosed at the management commentary rather than footnotes.
On the whole, you've asked a question twice, right? Who should decide on what is primary, what is secondary? Are we clear on the objective function? Are we clear on what relevance is? I mean, because we cannot make that decision without defining precisely what relevance is. And relevance, of course, if you go around the room here, people would define that differently as well. So I think it's going to be hard practically, even if we decide on who decides what primary and secondary is, practically it's going to be a tough decision to make.
That's the reason of my question.
Of course, no, I understand, but I'm asking.
Well, just throwing in relevance, we might as well add in materiality then.
Right, exactly. So
can I ask, I'm just curious how you would apply the principle of materiality to disclosure? Because one of the issues that we've discussed as users is if you have a small defined benefit pension scheme, perhaps you don't need the full 4 pages on IS 19. How would preparers view that?
Any preparers prepare 4 pages on immaterial pension schemes? You do, Malcolm.
When just by page count, and you look at our annual report, I mean, you would, if you just did it by page count, and we've actually done some way of reducing it, but if you think we were either a share-based compensation company, or a pension company, or a financial services company, we wouldn't conclude that we are pharmaceuticals.
But would you be in favour of...
So, I mean, you end up with all this stuff which you have to put in, which doesn't actually help you as users understand absolute risks of our business.
So would you be in favour of applying that materiality concept to disclosure, if it were up to you, rather than up to you and the auditors?
Yeah, I mean...
But Malcolm, are the share-based payment disclosures not material? Or is it that you don't provide enough on revenue?
I'd argue a lot of the share-based compensation stuff, tables on maturity of different plans. I mean, obviously, we haven't had to group stuff in order to get anything to me. But I don't know what people do with it. But we're prepared to give you it, but I don't know what you do with it.
Tanya?
Maybe just to turn the discussion a little bit on its head is that rather than preparers trying to anticipate what's material for users, interestingly in Australia our regulator it's not regulated in terms of being mandated, but essentially extremely encouraged, if you can determine the difference, in terms of something called an operational financial review, an OFR, and essentially that allows management and the board to really communicate with investors and users as to what they see as material and what's important. So they seem to really draw out from the financial statements as well as operational discussion what they see as important. And then that allows the user to cross-reference, I suppose, in their analysis from the OFR to the financial statements what's actually material. So I think maybe to suggest, rather than try and turn it on its head as to what's material, we have these disclosures. Different people find different things useful. Maybe it's then for management of the board to communicate what they think is important, perhaps through a narrative or through some sort of other means from which they draw from the financial statements to communicate that.
But that would be the director report or the management commentary?
So we have now what is called an OFR, which is essentially much broader than just the director's report. It's actually really to combine all of the financial and operational commentary from both the board and management in a narrative to the shareholder that basically communicates what's been happening, what's important to them, where they see the risks. And that's actually, it's only fairly new in Australia in the last 18 months, and that's getting very good feedback generally from users about, and in fact from management as a way in which to, I think, diffuse somewhat this debate as to what's material and what's not material.
Isn't that similar to the EC prospectus directive they have here in Europe?
I don't know.
Is it?
I think most jurisdictions have one. In the US it's called management commentary. Some members of my committee are keener on the US approach because it's more prescriptive. So you get less opportunity for management spins, I'm sorry folks. And more, you know, they all have to report on this, so that maybe the OFR is a disciplined approach to that. There's something called the OFR in the UK. The integrated reporting, which works, is another way of looking at it, and doesn't complement most of these other initiatives.
Okay, any further comments on this? Oh, bang on time. We've all been very disciplined in the breakout sessions. So we have some lunch in the usual place, and we'll reconvene at 1:15.